Welcome to the Institute for Story podcast. I'm your host, Dee Daniels, ready to turn on the nightstand light, cozy up with your favorite blanket, and open our minds and hearts to all of the beautiful images that come along with a meaningful story. And to help me kickstart this podcast that is all about story, I'm thrilled to welcome our first two guests, the founders of Institute for Story, Dr. Bertice Berry and Jamie Espina. This is going to be a great podcast. I know we are all very excited about what's to come.
We're founders.
Look that's at right. us. I know it sounds kind of cool when you said it.
It does. It sounded like, ooh, that's what we had to do.
Finally, something to put on my tombstone.
You don't have one of those? You plan on dying?
Oh, no. Well, I want to get into a little bit of everyone's background and where Institute for Story came from. Mm-hmm. Bertice, obviously, you have quite the bio and so many wonderful things that you've done in your life so far and quite the story yourself.
Crazy.
And sociologist, yeah, mm-hmm. PhD, which I'm pretty sure stands for powerful, heavenly, and divine. I don't know. Oh. It's just... That's what
sweet.
I've heard.
I don't know. Ask my children or either of my exes.
You've written many books. You go out and speak your story all the time. Mm-hmm. And talk a little bit about your story. I think one of the things that struck me about you was watching your TEDx talk. Mm. And the dress that you were wearing.
Oh, yeah.
My goodness. And that is a big part of your story.
Yeah, it's a big part of one of the stories. One of the things we say at Story Institute is that people don't have a story. We're libraries with many, 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 many books. And those books start and stop, you know, and you can leave them and you can go back and revisit them. So the beautiful thing about story for me was I was recovering from a head injury and I could no longer read. Which, you know, I had this professor who demanded that you read 6 books every week that he would assign, and he would pull a quiz from one of them, and you never knew which one. Mm. So I continued that practice, and I couldn't read. So I was trying to get to whoever I am and how I am, and one day something said, make a dress. And I was like, that's stupid. I don't know how to sew. That is so stupid. But I had been listening to books on tape for the first time in my life. I thought it was something for old people. And then my daughter said, yeah, that's you. And so the books opened up this avenue of story. And so I said, when I can read, I'm going to start researching the science of story because I think this is where it is. A neurologist had told me that what I was feeling was that all my stories had crashed. There's a story for walking, a story for talking, a story for walking and talking. And all of those stories were defragmented, and I would have to reboot. And so I wanted to understand that. But I was also told to remain open, to move to my heart. And from my heart, not only did my stories come up, but this ability to sew that I never had before. But then I learned through DNA that my great-great-grandmother did.
Wow.
And so the stories that are hidden in us, not only from our generation, but from generations before. And so I began to explore story. And, you know, remaining open is a dangerous thing. And a friend called and said, we need you to be on the board for Hospice Savannah. And I was like, I just got done saying I'm getting off of some of these boards. I'm doing too much. And she said, no, look into it. And so I called and I was talking to Kathleen, the president, CEO. And I said, you know, I don't know. And she said, well, have you checked into the story keeping program? Mm. And I was like, wait a minute, what? And so here was this thing that again was bringing me back to story. So now not only do I connect through story and share through story, I sew story into my clothes.
Right.
I print images, and the TEDx talk was, I was wearing a dress with the TEDx logo on it. Because you can do that when you get up and decide to make something.
Right.
So story is not only everywhere, but story, as you know, begets story, and it connects us. It's the thing that does it. It just connects us. Some people like to center in somebody else's story, but the truth of the matter is you don't have to. You're already connected.
That's such a good point. Jamie, you've been carrying the torch with Hospice Savannah for a long time. When did you pick up that torch? How was that process?
Well, in relation to the story and the story concept, when I started Hospice Savannah, I started as a bereavement counselor, which was really, I always tell everyone, it was the best job I ever had because it was listening to people's love story all day long.
Mm.
People say, how do you do it? I said, I feel fortunate. And the great thing about it was that I didn't have to solve it because there is no solving grief. I gave people tools. I listened to them. Someone sharing their love through story that really got me connected. But it was actually Dottie Klutz, our nurse at the time, who chose to become a story keeper because she heard everyone have a desire to tell their legacy, to tell their story. So she went to our CEO and said, I want to record people's life stories. And so it was really that year, that first year I started with Hospice Savannah 20 years ago. We were talking, it was Christmas time. I didn't have any money back then. In fact, I was just having a conversation about how little money I got paid back then. I mean, that was the going rate for a bereavement counselor.
Right.
And so it wasn't a lot of money. So she suggested that I record stories as gifts. And I wasn't thinking, what a beautiful thing this was. I was thinking, this is great. I'm not going to have to spend any money.
Right.
And I'm going to come out a hero. And so I recorded my mother's story, who later got dementia. And so now I have that recorded and have her history. And I recorded my brother's story, and at their wedding, I was able to read portions of the story.
Wow.
So it really was a gift. And so it really taught me how story is at our core. And the more I researched, the more I really looked into it, is that the reason we are here as this generation of sapiens is because of the ability of story. Previous sapiens didn't survive because they didn't have the ability to share their story, which included watch out for this, do this, you know, whether it was on drawings or, but the ability to share that story is what keeps us alive. And when Dr. Barry and I started talking, this was during the pandemic, it was a Zoom, it was just kind of like a marriage in heaven because we were both on the same page that as a culture, especially here in America, but I'm sure worldwide, that we are moving further and further from the concept of story. We're digitized with how we communicate. We text. We don't talk to each other. We, you know, kids don't even use the phone anymore. So we're losing that. It's innate in us. So we're trying to awaken it. And that's how really we created the Institute for Story, to awaken what's innate in us to get people to tell their stories. Because it's the only thing that's going to bring our guard down and allow us to cohabitate successfully.
Mm, that's the truth about that. Bertice, I was listening to an interview you did some time ago, and it really, really struck me, and the name of it was Your Piece of the Sky. Mm. And
I don't know what day it is.
Now, I believe you were the keynote speaker for a veterinary conference that was going on. And I mean, I have to be honest, when I first read the title, I thought it said Your Piece of the Pie. So I thought it was going in a whole different direction of baking, but it didn't, and that's fine.
It's a good thing.
But is that how you picture everyone's story or one of their stories as their piece of the sky?
Yeah. You know, that we're all inhabiting these places where we are. And so we can see what we can see from where we are in that point of the sky, in that place in the sky. But it's something that can be shared. It's a space that can be shared. It's a space that can be observed, right? And nobody has more than anybody else. And nobody is better than anybody else. Nobody sits higher than anybody else. We all have our own space. And we have an opportunity to do something with it. And the irony of it is those who choose to not do anything with it and look at everybody else's story or make their story their own, find themselves angry at those who do. Like, how dare you get the podcast thing? Who do you think you are with the cool mohawk? You know? Because we didn't dare to be who we are, our own authentic space, piece of the sky. We're upset about you living yours truly.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more than enough. More than, you know, I was looking at the stars the other night. I don't mean to sound just like that deep. I'm just tired. And it was like, this is infinite.
Mm-hmm.
It is amazing. I was looking at, staring at the ocean. It's the same ocean that my ancestors were brought over on. And I love that ocean.
Mm.
Because what somebody did with it doesn't change it.
Mm.
So, you know, yeah, you know, whether it's my six dogs that are now down to one, or the way I walk with young folks or my family, my biological family or my extended family, which is goes on and on forever. What I do with the space is really up to me. And what I fail to do with it is also up to me.
Hmm.
So, you know, when Jamie and I had, Jamie told me a story that he doesn't tell often, which, you know, I really need always to remind myself of, that he was one of the first people to sit folks with HIV and AIDS down in groups together, lawyers and homeless teens and prostitutes and judges, to share their stories. And it brought down all those walls of who we think we are or how we think we're higher than somebody else. And in that space, that story sharing was the thing that healed. You know, everybody's running for a cure.
Mm.
He's not a scientist. That's not his sky. But what he did with his sky was to heal forever. And I'm just, you know, I brag about you all the time because...
Well, I wasn't the first. It was...
You were one of the first.
Well, thank you.
You were one of the first. Stop playing. Stop playing with me right now.
You know, you can't get angry at someone's truth. You can't get angry at at their reality. I just came from a funeral of one of our original board members, Elizabeth Oxnard, an amazing woman in our community, started the Philharmonic, just had done so much for the community. And when her grandson got up and told his story, you know, it was a Catholic funeral, which is with a lot of ritual, which is so important. But ritual sometimes can take you away from the emotion.
Mm.
When the story came out, that's when it is. And that's when you feel so close and so connected. And I'm just going to share the story because it was so great. They said that she was always helping people in need. And someone didn't have a car, and he asked her to co-sign a loan. And she said, sure, I'll co-sign a loan for you. She goes, and I tell you what, if you don't make the payment, I won't get mad. I'll just kill you. And that story sums up Elizabeth Oxnard perfectly. And you know, that's the beauty of it. It's who we are.
Oh, that's fantastic. What a great story.
It is.
Boy, my grandmother said some similar things. It wasn't exactly that when I asked her to co-sign, but it was something similar. Let's talk a little bit about what's coming up, because, you know, story is such a wonderful thing that is going to be highlighted at this year's Story Conference, and there are so many wonderful people that are going to be involved in that. This is going to be kind of a moment, I think, for people to get involved and say, wow, I can actually do something with my story that's going to move the needle in my life,
mm-hmm.
whether that's business related, whether it's spiritual related, mm-hmm. whether it's mental health related, just personal growth related. But that's what the Story Conference will be all about.
Exactly. You know, it's cliche to say it's for everybody, but it truly is for everybody, because you can take the core, the message, the inspiration. Last year was our first conference, and it was overwhelming. It was beautiful. It was powerful. And so much so that the mayor proclaimed Story Day for...
StoryCon. Yeah, that's a different one.
Right. So it truly is something that everyone can come to and leave in a different place with a different understanding of humanity and a different ability to self-care and yeah. to cope.
And to be successful in however they define success. This year, we'll focus more on the story of our lives, the story of design and sound and your spirit and your wellness and history. We covered a lot of those areas last year. This year, the speakers and the participants, because it is a really a two-way conversation. The speakers and the participants. I think what was so amazing to us was the after conference. Mm. Like every night there was a whole gathering of folks around literally a campfire, you know, like those little fire things at the hotels where they just sat and shared stories and shared what came up for them in the in the conference during the day. I do hope that last year we had most people came from everywhere in the United States and some outside of. I hope that those who are local give themselves the gift of not only coming, but staying at the hotel and really being fully engaged in the conference. Because sometimes when you live in a place, I know this for myself, you kind of show up to what you want to show up to and you, oh, there's something else and you want to leave. But for those few days, mark that time on your calendar and come and really immerse yourself in this. I mean, we had the head of global responsibility from Northrop Grumman. Not only did they say we want to sponsor the conference, they said we're going to send the head who never participates in a conference outside of Northrop Grumman, came to StoryCon because of what the importance of it, and had just such a powerful story. The filmmaker Rita Colburn, who did the documentary Maya Angelou and the Marian Anderson documentary, came and closed our conference in a way that we just weren't, everybody was just kind of like, well, why should we leave? you know, so that caliber of speakers who come here to Savannah to participate in something that is amazing. I was on a road trip with my brother from California to Delaware last week. And I was getting these messages. My phone kept dinging and he and I are like jamming to some old school music. And I'm like, and he's like, what's going on? Is that your phone? I'm like, yeah. So all these people going, would you please repost StoryCon? When is StoryCon? We got to register for StoryCon. And I was like, well, I was waiting for you storytellers, to those who had been here before,
right,
to get the opportunity to book first. But now it's open and we want people to register now. It's not like last year people weren't sure if the pandemic would give way for them coming. Folks are now like, nothing's stopping me. Mm-hmm. Because it is so good.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of people have been itching to get out and really kind of reconnect with each other, but also themselves, because, you know, a lot of people have been trapped and feel like they've been trapped for a long time.
Yeah. The self is social. And the thing that connects us, Muriel Rukeyser, feminist poet from the 50s, said the world is not connected by tiny atoms. It's connected by our stories. And watching people, we did a night, which we'll do again this year. It was kind of like an open mic karaoke, but it was with story and some music. And one woman told a story about working at a prison and being the prison librarian and how important it was for her to make sure she helped people liberate their minds. And another woman who had signed up to tell a story said, I was going to tell one story, but now I have to tell this story. Nobody knows this here about me. I was in prison.
Wow.
And it was the prison librarian who helped me through that time to help liberate my mind. And these were two people who didn't know each other prior to the conference, were lived in different states, and they looked at each other and they were like, just bring it in. There's not a dry eye in the place, of course, but story connects that way. And it's one thing to do it virtually or, you know, within family. It's another thing to come in person and to hear these amazing presenters talk about how to use story in your life, in your business. We know that the most successful leaders are the best storytellers. How do you do that? How do you cultivate the stories that are true to you to become that leadership tool? So you'll learn all of those things, but you also will connect with your own stories.
Mm. That's powerful. And I think that's one of the most important things that we highlight on this podcast, is not only the people that are going to be at StoryCon, but also how we're going to break down and sort of dissect what a story is, how you can make it better, how you can really get in touch with the parts of a story and let that resonate to someone else. And really just, I think that's going to be one of the most inspirational pieces of StoryCon. I know it was last year, and I think it will be even more in depth, you know, this year.
You know, we spend so much time with our checklist on is this person like me or not like me, and checking them off because they're not. Well, they're a smoker, or they do this, or they're part of this political party, or and story is the opposite. I mean, it takes away all of that. It allows us, as Dr. Barry said, it allows us to connect on these very core levels of humanness. And so we want to incorporate that in the community. You know, we want Savannah to be known for story. I mean, Savannah is known for story. We want to make it bigger, make it more, make Savannah, you know, just on the map.
I think that was pretty apparent when the mayor waved the flag for story. And I mean, he was moved, you know, just like everyone else, to say, okay, this is a big deal. And this is the tie that binds.
Well, the fascinating piece was watching his aha moment. Mm. So we had him present at the park, and he told his COVID story, which is he became mayor in February. In March, the pandemic hit. The Savannah St. Patrick's Day Parade is one of the second largest parades in the country. He had to cancel it. And so he had to deal with that. And he, on stage, processed that by telling his story. And after he told it, I think, he was lifted and he realized, okay, he got it. He goes, okay, you're right. A story works. He goes, I've been friends with Dr. Barry for all this time, but now I totally get it. So it was powerful to watch.
He said he hadn't really, you know, it's like everybody. You're doing day in, day out. You're going to the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. He had never really processed or even heard the story from the beginning to that point of how he coped and what he did and what it felt like in the process of all of that. And so he was like, whoa, wait a minute. And then his security detail came up afterwards and said, man, I didn't think about it. We've been through a lot. We have a big story. Mm. And it was, you know, just a 2-year period. But for them, hearing the whole thing back, and then people in the audience to be able to connect, like, yeah, remember how angry we were about St. Patrick's Day, but how grateful we were that we weren't a leper colony afterwards. You know? And knowing that there's a decision, there's a person involved, there's a caring. It's enabling you to not only tell a better story, but to reflect on your story, to connect to somebody else's story, and to be able to heal from whatever you thought was, you know, going on with somebody else. I don't know what anybody's thinking. I know what you said. It may not be what you feel, but all I know is what you told me.
Right.
So what we know about grief is that the goal of the mourner is to make sense of the loss. For some, that's easy because they were part of the disease process. They've been living it. For some, it's very difficult. Their loved one went to work and never came back. So we make sense of it by telling our story. So story allows us to put it in a package. So everything we experience through our senses. And it's all just floating. But it's story that helps us pull it together and put it in the back of our mind where it's saved so that we can pull it up whenever we need it. Because it doesn't make sense until we tell the story. And so the mourner constantly tries to tell a story because we're wired. We're wired to tell story. The problem is, we're not as receivers of that story. We're not good, because when the mourner starts to tell their story, we stop them and we take advantage. And we, because we're wired too, we tell our story. So you lost someone and you say, oh, my dad died. Oh, well, my dad died.
And they take that
opportunity to tell their story. Or they're so fearful of emotion that they say, oh, they're in a better place. Or, you know, all the euphemisms that just
try to comfort.
Which aren't helpful.
No.
So the beauty of story is that it's such a great way to recap what you've experienced. And you frame it and you save it, and it allows you to be at peace and to move forward. So horrific experiences, you know, the pandemic experience, whatever experience may be, once you're at a different place, you can tell that story, and then you can kind of let go and you move forward and it becomes the same place. So we talk about the science of story a lot. The idea that when someone tells a story well, and that's what's the beauty about the conference, is that we're not only giving you permission to be authentic and to tell your story, because that's people's greatest fear, is to be vulnerable. Because, you know, once it starts, it just comes out and that's it starts right. flowing and it sometimes doesn't stop and you don't know what's going to happen. And that's very scary. So we give permission to that, but we also teach them how to tell a story well because, you know, we're not taught that. And so, you know, some folks ramble, some folks get derailed.
Right.
And so we lose them. But when someone tells their story well, the listener's body produces oxytocin, which is the chemical that binds us. So I am now bound to you because of your story. Mm-hmm. So I have a connection with you, and I'm going to protect you, and I'm going to care for you, and I'm going to talk about you well because we're bound. And so that's why we pay millions to see movies. I mean, you know, it's Shakespeare, that's why we're still talking about him. I mean, because of that beauty of the story. And it's an honest story. And I love, Dr. Barry, and I'll ask you to talk more about it, is that it doesn't, a story doesn't even have to be our own story. It can be other stories.
It can be another the story of others, but as it relates to you.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so as it relates to me, then I take on this, you know, like people don't realize that, you know, well, who said this in the Bible? Jesus. No, that was Luke. Luke was saying what some Paul told him that Jesus said. And so we no, Jesus said it. No, Jesus didn't say this. This is right here. This is Luke telling you what Paul told him 75 years after, you know, the man was dead. And so somehow when told so well, we think it's first person narrative. Mm. But I tell people, say only what you like you're in a courtroom. What you saw, what you witnessed, what you heard, what you felt, what you experienced. So I now can say, Jamie did this, was one of the first people, and say it so well that you're sitting in that circle with those folks, because when he told me, I felt it. I not only felt it, I saw people who I know who live with HIV, who live with AIDS, who are well with it and a part of the story group. I can see them sitting in that circle. Mm-hmm. And so we don't have to have these cheap conversations about we need to be more empathetic and have the hard conversation. We have to be courageous and be uncomfortable being comfortable. When it's just the ancestors did the work. Mm. They got us in the same room. Our job is to tell their stories and ours. That's not the hard work. The hard work was, you know, this abolitionist that came down from up north got tarred and feathered. But I'm going to have my own conversation. No, it's not that hard. It's not that hard. You sit and you talk and you listen. And sometimes being that story keeper is more important to the teller than if you were to make that automatic connection and blurt it out. I rode with my brother for 5 days. And for 5 days, he was like, why are you so quiet? I'm like, because you got some stuff you need to say. Mm. And I got to listen. And that's enough. Not only is it enough, it's rich. So, you know, we can, when you're sharing someone else's story, you can tell how it connects to you and what you felt from it. So I can tell the stories that of my mother that she shared with me in her journals after, you know, like she was writing them before she died, and I found them 6 months after. And not only can I tell that story, I can connect it back to what happened to me and the meaning of it. And suddenly forgiving her is not a chore, nor is it even necessary. I'm the one that needs forgiveness because I didn't understand all that she had been through to cause her to be this alcoholic, abusive woman. Good Lord, how did she even keep us and keep us together is my new question. Not why did you do that? It's, oh my God, how amazing were you having been through all these things? So her story is my story and I'm free to tell it because I'm a recipient of the things that she went through. I'm no longer the victim of abuse. I'm a survivor in a long line of survivors, and knowing someone else's story allows me to build on my own.
Well, and then you think about, you know, how someone perceives and listens to that story about you and your mom, and you think from this perspective, as I'm listening to you tell your mother's story, but also a piece of your story, there's a piece of me that says, yes. I wonder what I need to forgive.
That's it.
There's a piece of me that says, I wonder if I'm not looking at my mother's full story. There's yes. a piece of me that looks at the story and the story.
Yes.
And internalizes, and that's where we connect and have that potential healing.
That's exactly it. It's we all are sky. Mm,
that's right. Or pie, as I heard it. Either way, it's fine.
Same thing.
Either way, it's good.
Yeah, sweet potato.
It's very good. Well, speaking of stories, I thought it would be good for us all to share a little bit of our own story. Is there someone in your life, do you have a story from maybe childhood, or it doesn't have to be childhood, that someone was very meaningful, a moment with someone that really touched you in a way, or made you look at yourself and say, oh yeah, I can do this going forward. It really shaped who you are mm-hmm. today. Do you have a story?
I actually have a current story. To me, the most honorable people are the people who have the ability to see their faults, address them, and try to make change, you know? And so when you work in an industry, you know, I've been in this industry for 20 years, I'm on my fourth or fifth CEO, and our current CEO, Kathleen Benton, she's younger, she is a powerhouse, she is brilliant, she is a mover and a shaker. And we've had some challenges the last year or so. We had some personalities in the organization, and I've watched her reflect on herself, and that's inspired me. You know, I've watched her reflect on herself and work to make change, and you don't often see that anymore. I mean, in my world, I don't see that as much as I used to, and so she has inspired me just to grow. I mean, just to, you know, we can get so stagnant in our worlds, and especially if you've been doing something for 20 years, you become very comfortable. And so it's been very fascinating and inspiring to watch someone grow who's a leader, and then see how their growth reflects in the entire organization. So I see change, I see movement. I mean, that's kind of where I've been lately. The other piece, for some reason, I've been very aware of sexism in the workplace. Mm. And I don't know what really clicked this in, but I do see, you know, being male, you know, you everyone's got their own lens. And so I probably hadn't paid attention in the past, but lately I've been watching. And there is, you can really see how women have to work a little different, work a little harder. And I mean, and you can go to gay, you can go to black, you can go to, I mean, there's all those, but you can really see it. I mean, if you just stop, I think we're so, everything's become so politicized and that we don't even hear anything anymore. But if you step back and you just watch things and you just observe, you can really see the little things that people go through and how it affects them and how, you know, decisions get made because of them. And it's fascinating to just be able to not be enraged by things, but to step back and watch. And again, it all goes back to story, because you hear people tell their story. And then if you listen to them, and if you keep their story, you understand what they're really saying, mm-hmm. you know, and that's the key, because it's the story. But then you have to really figure out what are they saying in though. Mm-hmm. That's what comes to my mind.
That's good.
It's really good. I was thinking of the story, storied people in my life who've had influence, and there's so many who with just little words, kind words. You know, people didn't know the poverty that I was living through, but they would plant these beautiful seeds that they didn't know, you know, that they were doing. And when we came in, this is how story begat story. We're talking about the story of, you know, the, I will co-sign for you. And you know, my mother wouldn't have said that. Mm-hmm. My grandmother wouldn't have said
That's right.
So, I was going to buy my first car, and I was already in graduate school. I didn't drive until late. Nobody in my family had a car growing up. And this teacher, Karen Denton, who literally found my voice and was the one that said, you should go to college. And I never said it out loud, but it was my prayer, because no one in my family had ever been, like not a cousin, not an uncle, not no one. And she said out loud, you should go to college. And so I'm in college, and you know, now I'm graduating with honors, President's Cup for Leadership, in graduate school. I need to get a car because I somehow got this gig doing stand-up comedy after teaching, you know. So I'm going to teach and then go do comedy, but I don't have a car and I can't drive. Mm. I don't have a driver's license either. So my childhood friend Tia, who was at StoryCon, drove from Delaware to Ohio with her car so that I could use it for the test. And my teacher, Karen, said, I will co-sign for you, because I had no credit. I didn't use credit for anything. I will co-sign for you to get a car. I ended up not needing her to co-sign for me because I had like money coming in from telling jokes, which is so hilarious. But that she was willing to do this for a former student who she saw something in, right? And that my childhood friend was willing to do this thing. And, you know, thinking of the two of them, I thought of her many ways, but until we talked about that co-signing for a car, it just reminded me that she stepped up. Turns out, like, I could pay cash for it, which is, like, hilarious now that I think about it. It wasn't a brand new car. It didn't, you know, it wasn't that deep. In fact, it had a cold start problem. I'd be at comedy clubs, and I'd wait till everybody would leave, and I'd have to spray something on the carburetor to get the car to go. But it was mine, right? So this whole thing about leading with love and inspiring with trust, you know, when you spoke of Kathleen, CEO of Hospice Savannah, not only is she young and brilliant, such a compassionate leader. Mm-hmm. And always reflects on what she's doing wrong, even when she ain't doing nothing wrong.
Right.
That kind of leadership is what we need. But if we're not telling those stories, you only see Excel spreadsheets. Mm. And as a sociologist who came about at the time when we felt that we needed to quantify everything to make ourselves look more legitimate, but I was trained by story keepers and storytellers who were the, you know, the founders of the study of social movements. I'm also trained to say, what was she wearing? And what was the air like? Was it crisp? Was it cool? Was it damp? Was it humid? Humid, what was it like? So that our children's children's children or whoever's around gets a sense of that story and can realize that, you know, it wasn't just that they were out there protesting. They were wearing their Sunday best in sweltering heat.
That's right.
And that makes a difference. And telling it that way makes a difference.
It does. Wow. That's a good story. No one can follow that. No, I'll share mine. I talking about finding your voice and bringing up this story as you telling that. I had a principal at school. She was a powerhouse at 5'2", but she wore some tall heels, so that certainly gave her the boost. It was a small private school, but she also, not, you know, just being the principal, she also taught our music class. She was very gifted, just wow, talented piano player, and could do so many things, could sing and write music, and she was so talented. And I was a shy, shy girl, and wow, I did not like speaking out. I did not like using my voice in any way, mm-hmm, shape, or form. And she asked me to sing a note in music class, and she hit that note on the piano and said, "You go ahead, your turn." She hit the note. I was supposed to copy the note, same. And nothing would come out. I stood up and my knees were shaking. Mm. My neck was sweating. I tried, my voice was trembling and I could not get anything out. And she said, "Let's try it again." And she kept hitting that note. And even though nothing was coming out, "Let's try it again." And she kept hitting that note. And every time she would hit the note, I'd try again and my face would get red because all the kids were looking at me. And finally, she said, "I'm going to play the note and then I'm going to sing it with you. So let's do it together." So she hit the note and she sang it with me. And she held that note for about 25 seconds until maybe 20 seconds in, I finally joined her. Because I realized she wasn't going to stop singing the note.
Wow.
She was going to keep doing it until I jumped in. So I sang the note and, oh, it was shaky and probably not even on key. But she pulls me aside after the class and she said, "You can sing the note. You did great once it came out. Just believe in yourself. You did great." And every time she would call on me from then on, she would do it with me first, whatever it was. and show me the way until I started getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And she told me later on, as a couple of years went by, she said, look at where I am. You can be here. Use your voice. Mm. You've got a good voice. You've got a good message. You've got a good heart. People want to see it and hear it and feel it. Mm. And so it gave me that confidence to start singing on occasion and to join the choir and to do my own thing. And then 3 years later, I found myself at a secretary's position at a radio station.
Mm. Wow.
And the program director came to me during lunch one day and said, you have a very nice voice. Mm. Why don't you step back here in the DJ booth and use it? And I said, oh, no, I'm too nervous to do that. And he said, don't be nervous to do that. I'll do it with you the first time.
Mm. Ooh. It took you right back.
It took me right back to Mrs. Dowdy, who was that moment that met each other right there.
Yes.
Just moment by moment. Yes. And he did. He went into the studio with me on a Sunday afternoon during a baseball game. And he said, in 20 minutes, we'll have a break. We're going to play a song and you're going to talk right after the song. And I said, I don't know. I don't know if I can do that. He said, no, I'll do it with you. 20 minutes went by. We were ready. We wrote down the card what I was going to say right after the commercial. Flipped the microphone on. He said, I'll talk first, you talk second, and then we'll end it together. Great. Flipped the microphone on, and he did. He talked first, and I knew I could join him and talk second.
Yes.
And 26 years later, I'm still in radio and podcasting and all
wow.
of the media things. Thank you, Mrs. Dowdy.
Wow. I was about to say that. Thank you, Mrs. Dowdy.
I'm just so thankful that I had the opportunity to speak about her about a year before she passed away from cancer. And there was this moment at a mother's and daughter's breakfast that was having at a church nearby, and I almost didn't get up and speak. And something told me I needed to say something about her. And I got up and I spoke about her, and she was in the audience, and she just cried and cried while I was speaking. And she told me afterwards, I had no idea. I had this much of a moment in your story and your life.
Wow.
It's a big deal.
It is a big deal.
Yeah.
It is a big, big deal. Thank you, Miss Dowdy. Thank you, Mrs. Dowdy.
No doubt about it. What are you guys hoping will come out of this year's StoryCon?
Next year's?
Right.
And that, yes. Perfect.
Well, I hope that it continues to grow and to echo, and that people walk away feeling like they did last year, but even more inspired to utilize stories of their life and the stories of others and the stories to connect through story. And to see, I think people are beginning to see the power of story. I don't think they're quite where we are of seeing the science and the use for story in everything that you do. To, you know, that moment that you just shared, Mrs. Dowdy, was maybe 2 minutes. And that will never leave me. So we want to create those moments that will never leave and inspire people to be inspired to inspire somebody else with their stories, with their lives, to own their piece of the sky and to make it a better place for everybody else to look up to.
Hmm. Well said.
Well said. Well, I think it's going to be amazing. And I think it's going to be the moment that we're all talking about. And I think you're right, Bertice. I think that if you can stay at the hotel, if you can immerse yourself,
yeah,
really, you know, you think about, why get out of the pool, you know,
right,
when you're going to get distracted?
Right.
You know, why not just sit in it for the time that it's happening? And I would imagine it's going to be, once again, life-changing for a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when I go to a conference, and I go to loads of them, I go in, I don't just walk up when it's time for me to speak. I go in day or 2 days before. I sit in on everything else. I'm there. I'm being paid to be there to impart some kind of wisdom or something for those people. But why not get what they're sharing and learning as well? And then by the time you're up doing what you were there to do, is so much richer. Your experience is so much richer. I would never want to just come in and come out for this or that without feeling the ribbon around the whole thing, because it is a powerful power. You know, the presenters were like, I didn't expect all of this. Mm. I didn't know. And the participants were like, why didn't you tell me? And the criticism that we got afterwards, which was hilarious, because Jamie and, you know, Kathleen, they were like, well, maybe we could have done a better job. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. What are they saying? They said that they didn't know it was going to be this good. We should have told them it was going to be this good. I'm like, so you mean they didn't read? But we knew it was going to be amazing. Mm. We couldn't have known except for what we planned, right? But that human experience that comes in, that makes it its own. I mean, people still contact me or walk up to me and say, oh my God, I was at that conference and it changed my life. Mm-hmm. You know, people say that all the time. But the conference changed people's lives. One of our participants, a man named Sean Saunders, had ghostwritten over 300 books.
Oh, wow.
People were moved by him, was really encouraged by his presentation. Shortly afterwards, he suffered a massive stroke. He's only 36 years old. And he could not read. He could not walk. He could not talk. He couldn't figure out anything. But all of those folks from that conference, he could see them and he could hear them and he could experience them. And he says that it was a part of his healing, that he had more stories to share. He had more stories to tell.
Wow.
He had more work to do. So it sounds like unbelievable. And it is.
Right.
It absolutely is. And it is, you know, we've only had 1 year. To have something be that successful in the first year was kind of crazy. We're going to take it up a notch.
Oh, I'm sure of it. And people can get on board with it now and
yeah, they can sign up now. Right now. Go to the instituteforstory.com. They can register. They can book their hotel room. We're working on building the speakers and getting them more information about what to expect. But as Dr. Barry says, it's going to be fantastic.
Oh, I can't wait. Yeah, I really can't. Dr. Patrice Barry and Jamie Espina, I'm excited to be on this journey with you guys. This is going to be a fun podcast, and it's going to be an even better StoryCon this year.
It's going to be fantastic. And Mrs. Dowdy, thank you.
Thank you.